Well, everybody, welcome to A Course in Miracles. Hi, Donna. Hi, Kenny.
Hi. Hi. I think I said hi. I don't know.
You did. You did. You sound good. Sound good. Well, tonight we're going to begin a beautiful, deep, still challenging, but beautiful section of A Course in Miracles. It's called The Forgotten Song. And, you know, it's pretty words. They're challenging words, and then some pretty words to invite you to take the step that's offered. So we'll look into this as we go along. There's a couple of levels that it invites you to learn, and so we'll hit a couple of those. But ultimately, if you're going to wake up, if you're going to have a spiritual awakening, if you're going to have the miracle that would shift you away from your identity as a separate body, if this were to occur, there is a sort of equanimity, a sort of middle way, a sort of balance, a sort of open-mindedness, a sort of self-empowerment that you must reach. It's the opposite of being a victim. The opposite of being a victim. It's a self-empowerment experience. It's a freedom experience that you come to. And Course in Miracles is such a generous way to bring you here, because it's loaded with promises that would help you feel confident that you can make this interesting choice. In fact, interesting is much too gentle of a word, because it's a radical shift in your identity. It's a radical shift in what you know to be true. That's body, time, and space. And some of you have had great meditations and spiritual practices, and part of you knows that there is another way that is beyond the body, not the body. Excellent. You're ready for the next level up. But readiness is not mastery. As the book says, I think three times, readiness is all good, but it doesn't mean that you would actually make the choices at the time that they were most useful. In fact, the way momentum and the ego goes, you'll probably make the same decisions that you made before, probably, if it's a shocking situation or a high loss situation or a high ego situation, even though you know better, even though you're ready, you've read the lessons and you have part of your mind is healed, you're very, very deep in the ego experience and the body experience. You must not underestimate the ego. Even though you've had holy instances, even though you have awakening moments, that's why I like A Course in Miracles, because it really gets a chance to scrub deep to your motivation and your beliefs that keep showing up day after day. You wonder, why did I feel afraid when that person said I was wrong? For example, you're like, doesn't really matter that much to me, and you know, I thought I was really beyond that. I was beyond feeling afraid when somebody criticizes me. You wonder, why does fear come up deeply and comment on your state of being? It's because of the habits of mind. Have you deeply, deeply believing in the situation of the world and the material evidence that keeps showing up every time you open your eyes? Seriously, it's as simple as that. You keep getting feedback that there is a world and you're in it. You have great thoughts about freedom, but you keep getting feedback from your other senses. They say you're in a world, in a body, and that's your reality. You hope that the spirit is true. This is the most common situation. Everybody is somewhere on the continuum of completely in sad sack victimhood or completely ready to welcome the light and the life as an extension of God. So somewhere in between, everybody's somewhere in between. So tonight, we're gonna choose to look at a facet of this teaching. And the Course uses some pretty graphic words, I think, to help us see the simple nature of blindness as it applies to your spiritual path. Blindness. I'm going to break it down a little further for our meditation. For our meditation, I'd like you to take the next 5 minutes or so, and I'd like you to think about, just entertain, and I'll walk you through it a little bit, but let's see if we can get there. I want you to entertain this idea in your mind. Challenge yourself to answer this question for yourself. What does it take to have the freedom to choose? What does it take to have the freedom to choose? What is required so you feel free and at ease to choose? And it might be helpful to start out your thinking to try to imagine a situation where you don't have the freedom to choose. When you don't have the freedom to choose, it's one action or thought only, and it must be done now or else. You might go there to help frame the question about the freedom to choose. What's it like to not apparently have the freedom to choose? What's happening when there seems to be no choice? And now, what's it like when you have the ability to choose? You feel free. You have the freedom to choose. How's that different? And finally, this last minute or so, look a little deeper into something, just pick a word or a phrase or an aspect of it that comes to you about what is present when you have the freedom to choose. So you might recognize that we're being very careful here, that this is a step. This is a step. This is not a goal. This is a tool or a step or an empowerment awareness. So let's look in. Let's look into this, see what the group has to share. Tim, would you tell us what's present when you have the freedom to choose? What does it take?
What's present when I have the freedom to choose is heaven. If I don't have the freedom of choice, and there's only one thing in front of me, that's a form of hell.
Yeah.
It's the choice for something better that comes from heaven. That comes from the Creator, that, or the Holy Spirit as the intermediary. So I don't ever have to be afraid of not having a choice.
I can feel that. I can feel that. It's heaven versus hell.
Right. So it's, you know, what does it take? Nothing. It's the reality that currently exists. Mm-hmm. If you want to ask it a little, you know, with a little more aggression, what does it take? Awakeness, awareness that's the case, that you do have a choice and that can't be robbed from you. You can try to give it up unsuccessfully. You'll just play a game where you throw a rug over it, but it's still there and you pretend you don't know it. But short of that, choice is always yours, and choice is always associated with the higher power.
And no choice is hell.
Having no choice, yeah. Right.
I like it.
Being stuck without any choices, that's a form of hell. And the way you deal with the hell, by the way, is you don't combat it. You accept it as it is in the moment. Mm-hmm. And even in hell, that technique lessens the pain. And eventually, you burrow your way out by using that mindfulness.
Yeah.
Just not combating it, just saying, yes, this is what the experience is like of being in hell in this body at this time. And what I know is that it will change. It was different before. It'll be different again later.
Mm-hmm. Don't get stuck in it. Don't fight it. Yeah, don't stay in hell. Jacqueline, tell us about the freedom to choose.
Well, it's a lot of what Tim said, but just, you know, it's a gift from the Creator to be able to choose the choice. We have choice, free will, free choice. And that, yes, when we feel like we don't have choice or we have to choose among, it's part of this world, this illusion that we live in. So there's usually stress and some anxiety or, you know, there's all the things that go along with that that aren't real as we understand. So I saw it's just a gift that we have. And then I was looking at how I do feel at times. I can't seem to choose. And yet that's not true. And to really bring that into this learning or this understanding with what we're talking about is to really, really take a look at that and understand that I always have choice.
Yeah, you can think of alternatives, but you don't feel free to choose.
Yeah.
Because there's, you said, stress and anxiety. I might lose this way, and I might lose that way. Very good. Very good. No stress and anxiety, you're free to choose. Very nice. Sundari, talk to us about the freedom to choose. Yeah, you!
Well, for me, actually, I think for everyone, choice is always about one's state, never about one's circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so the only degree of freedom we truly have is to choose our state. Mm-hmm. And what does it take to have freedom? What came to me was first desire, and then intention or willingness, and thirdly, courage or trust.
Nice, nice.
And I love this set of questions. We really have no control over people, places, or things. And I was thinking of when my daughter was 81 days in the hospital, and I was told every day she was dying.
Yeah.
Doctors. And, you know, I could have just gone down the tubes really easily and decided somehow to reframe the situation as to, instead of, oh, my daughter's dying, to what mom gets to be 10 to 16 hours a day with her 23-year-old. And so, and by holding a picture that made me joyful, which was of seeing her in the future at a lecture she was giving about that period of her life, I was able to choose my state. And not that I was really happy, but it brought in joy into a situation that was completely devoid of it. And then when do you have the freedom to choose always, really? And otherwise, peace and joy wouldn't be available to us. I mean, it's always a choice. And the most interesting to me was the last one, what's present when you have the freedom to choose? And I was really blank for a long time. And then I realized that I've come in my own beingness to believe that Holy Spirit and now are identical. And I realized that the only choice we always have is now. And so by choosing that we have a choice, we're going into union with Holy Spirit.
Nice. Good, good, good. And that is self-empowerment. Ross, talk to us about the freedom to choose.
I always know I'm next now because you unmute.
You let me. Yeah, I'll broadcast.
So, vigilance. So, the senses, the brain, the world we made, all are designed to help us or make us forget that we do have a choice. And so vigilance is something that comes up for me. And belief. In other words, I can have an opinion, I can have a preference, I can do this, I can do that. But the problem is believing that that's any of that's real. What I do, what I believe, my opinions, my preferences.
Yep.
So belief comes into it.
And belief. Even A Course in Miracles teaches it's like I said, like I was saying in the in our pre-time, that readiness is not mastery. Just because you've read the book and it makes these great promises, you're not necessarily going to do it. But the vigilance to apply it when the world comes at you, this is how you learn that what we talk about is true. And you are free, you are empowered, you can choose heaven, you don't have to be stressful. If you let your ego drive, you will get what the ego offers.
Yeah, you just take a step back and go, wait a minute, I don't believe that. Even though, you know, I see it on the TV that the world has gone to hell and the capital's being invaded. No. It's none of it's true. There's no point in taking sides. There's no point in being angry. You can choose just to see that as just part of the dream to try and rope you into the whole thing that, oh no, this is a place where God can't come in. So there it is. Look at that. It's just violent and all this other stuff. When actually the choice is, no. Let's see the real world. That's the choice.
Yes.
See the real, forgiven world instead of the violent, vengeance-filled world.
Yes. And have your Holy Spirit show you the capital invasion instead of your unholy spirit show you the capital invasion. You'd have to be vigilant to call on the Holy Spirit, the holy part of your mind. Otherwise, if you leave it on autopilot, I'll guarantee you, your ego's already got the steering wheel. And you will see death and destruction. Good, Ross. I like that. Vigilance. I like it a lot.
And belief. Belief is huge.
Well, at least. And just knowing somehow, somewhere, that you can choose.
Mm-hmm.
That you have that power somewhere, somehow. Critical. That takes a miracle, especially like in Sundari's situation where they're telling you every day your daughter's going to die. How does she choose to bring her light into the hospital under those circumstances? But she knows she can choose. Doesn't necessarily know what to choose. That's why I say this is very important that we work at this little aspect of choice, because it is part of your self-empowerment so that you know, you can discover, you're not stuck. Good, good, good. Donna, talk to us about the power to choose and how, what's present when you're free to choose. Oh, we still can't hear you. I see you're unmuted. But I can't hear you. You have a headset plugged in that's laying on the table, or are you going to figure it out? Oh. Okay, we're going to come back to Donna. And meanwhile, we're going to have Sandy talk to us about the freedom to choose.
Well, I like what everybody said. They pretty much said what I'm feeling, that I'm feeling about it. In meditating about it, it's what Ross said. It's the belief that I have the choice. In any moment, in any situation, that I have that choice to choose. It means it's a freedom, and what's present when I remember that is gratitude and acceptance of whatever is in that moment. I'm not very good at articulating this kind of stuff. It's just,
Yeah, Ross touched on it, what you're talking about, nicely.
Yeah.
Because he said it's, you're looking at the false world and believing in the false world if you think it's controlling you. And you're saying the truth is you have the choice, and Ross also said very nicely, you got to be vigilant to remember you have the choice.
Right.
It counts. It's not enough to do it on the cushion when you got A Course in Miracles in your lap and a nice warm tea and a candle and plenty of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fine. Practice. But the real practice is when you choose when you're confronted. Did you know that that's the only time you're going to experience a miracle is when your mind is challenged? When you have a problem. It's the only time you're going to experience a miracle. So I like what Tim said. Tim said, well, if you don't have the freedom to choose, you're in hell. And you're going to need a miracle. You would. Because you got a problem. A victimization problem. You've got a loss. Loss problem is occurring. Some type of loss is occurring. You're going to need a miracle. But when you've got your spiritual eye open, and you know that you're just there to be truly helpful, no matter what it is, even if it's helping your daughter die at a young age, oh my God. But if you're going to be bring your light, you can't be arguing with this situation. You would be then free to choose. You'd be free to hear the Holy Spirit counsel you through. That's good. Good, good. Emily, would you talk to us about the freedom to choose?
In my meditation, I was thinking of presence and like the absence of it. Nice. Being something that happens, and then I feel like a victim. You know, like there's no energy to deal with my circumstances. And then the thing that I notice is that there's an action required. And for me, to not feel like there actually is an absence of presence. So like engaging. And I remember mentioning I had tenants who weren't leaving because the governor said it was okay for them to not pay rent. And I was trying to sell my home. And I was feeling like a victim, like there was nothing I could do. So I took action in a negative way, which is get the tractor out and, jackhammers and, roll around the property. And it didn't really feel very good, but I was doing something. But what I changed up was I did take the fruit in the orchard and bless them, with making all kinds of canned goods that I was going to give them when I saw them leaving. So I saved up all these canned goods. So I was like blessing them through this process, always knowing in my heart that this would be the outcome, that they would be leaving at some point, thousands of dollars later. But it would happen, and I trusted. So in other words, the presence for me, I had to have faith in. Even though I couldn't see it, I had to believe in it. Really
trust. I like that word, presence. I really do, because that's when you're in the future on how bad it could be, or the past on what they've already said and done, proving that they're not going to cooperate, you're not free to choose to bring them the fruit now rather than as they leave. Oh, yeah, by the way, here's some fruit. Thank you. That's brilliant. Presence. I like it. Free to choose when you have presence. What do you got, Ross?
So just by happenstance, I'm going through Ken's Journey Through the Workbook.
Yeah, good.
There's a paragraph in here that seems really appropriate.
Bring it.
It says, "We must first look at what we are choosing against. This is not a course in denial or in pretending we are so holy we have no ego thoughts. Rather, this is a course in saying, I am not holy, otherwise I would not be in this world. I have these ego thoughts, but now have the means within my mind to look at them another way. Thus we do not deny we have a body with needs, nor deny the ego thought system itself. We simply look at them without judgment of ourselves or anyone else, and then happily watch them gently disappear."
Nice. That's some of
There's a nice choice.
Some of the more eloquent Ken you're going to hear.
Right. Yeah.
That whole thing he did later in his career, Ken was really putting it all together by the time, right? With the last couple of years, it was really, really well done.
Because to me, that's the thing. It's like, I have these ego thoughts, but I just choose not to believe them. So to me, that's the key. You just go, wait a minute.
You have the power to not believe them, even though you can think them.
So I love that paragraph.
You're not
freeing.
A sinner because you thought them.
What?
You're not a sinner because they're in your mind.
And you don't have to get rid of all thoughts and all
look at them.
All you. All needs of the body.
Yeah. Yeah. The
That's
body and the
freeing
ego
in itself.
What?
That's almost freeing in itself. I don't have to get rid of them. I just look at them and don't judge them. Or anybody else.
Yes. See through them. Go ahead, Sundari.
I used to be, I love what you said, Ross. It just, I used to be in a group where we did ego reduction sessions, and for years. And it took me like years and years in this group to realize that the ego doesn't reduce. It's simply that I pop out to a different place. And the story and my ego keep going. I mean, it's not like I'm not me, and there's no way not to be me.
Hey, look at, so Sundar, you picked up on that, and Ross, you read that section. I want to remind you of something. Everybody turn to page 366 in the text real quick. I want you to read one sentence. We looked at it last week, and it's perfectly appropriate this week, and it's on Ross's mind, and Sundari's, this is going to support what you said. 366, in the text, go right to the end of paragraph 2 and look at what Jesus has to say about your ego's thought process. He says, this is paragraph 2, sentence 7, the ego does not know what it wants to come of the situation. Period. And he clarifies. He says, the ego is aware of what it does not want, but only that. It has no positive goal at all. The ego works on fear and guilt. And if it thinks it can minimize fear and guilt, or it thinks it's clear for a while, it allows you some happiness. But its real strength comes from its ability to be afraid at the right times, see, and save you by making you afraid. Oh my God, is that any way to live? Where's the love? Good. Do not follow the ego. Sundari.
Well, I keep thinking what David Hoffmeister says, which is, it's not that sometimes you don't know your best interest. It's that you never
know. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes. And that would lead us, that's one of the lessons, as I'm not aware of my own best interest. And you really aren't. You who would be reading the book at that time couldn't possibly know your best interest. Your mind's preoccupied with past thoughts. You're defending. You're afraid. And you think that's strong. The next sentence, look at that, of paragraph 3. Without a clear-cut positive goal. See the word positive. That's not really in the ego domain. The ego works under a bunch of laws of loss. L-O-S-S. Not under laws of love and of creation and of light and gain. That would be heaven. That would be returning to your true nature. But here you've chosen to go on this big roller coaster ride in a body where its loss is the de facto condition. So it's no positive goal. So thanks, Ross, for bringing that up. Okay. Luann, would you... I got you unmuted. Would you talk to us about the freedom to choose?
Well, first of all, I tried to think of something in which I didn't have a choice and I couldn't find anything. So then I said, okay. So a lot of what people have said is what I'm kind of goal-oriented. So if I'm going to make a choice, I want to make the right one. So my goal was to use my belief that I have choices to lose use my trust that I can make choices and that I have a source of what to do that would guide me in the right direction. And that would be the Holy Spirit. I have to go to the Holy Spirit every time I want to do something that's important enough to me to want to do it right. Whatever right is, whatever loving is. I've always said that's what I want to do is I only want to love. So that's my source. So then I just said, oh, I have the right to choose the Holy Spirit or otherwise. That's basically, for me, what choice is about.
There is one of my first Course in Miracles teachers, and I attended his class for a dozen years or something, and he used to say his prayer to the Holy Spirit, choice, was, Holy Spirit, please give me exactly what I want. Or something better. And those are the only two choices. So if he didn't get exactly what he wanted, he'd say, good, Holy Spirit's taken over. No matter what it looks like.
It gives a huge sense of freedom.
Yes.
Because you can't go wrong if you're doing what the Holy Spirit says. So that's what it means for me.
Good, 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 good.
It's the ability to do what's right for me and for everybody else.
Kenny, can you talk to us about the freedom to choose?
Well, getting help from someone I trust.
Oh. Yeah. Nice. Bring on the power. Yes. This is another vector of A Course in Miracles, is don't do it alone. The whole idea of the ego is that you are alone and therefore helpless. So there is somebody with you all the time. If it isn't somebody, some other character in the dream that you trust, there is part of your mind, the Holy Spirit, also we call Jesus, as part of your mind that can talk you through it.
Right.
Excellent. That's free to choose. Go ahead and have a huddle with someone you trust. I love it. I love it. Okay, Donna, let's try your microphone.
I think it's working. I had to fix it in settings. So I, just to try to recollect where I was a half hour ago or whatever it's been, but I have had a lot of time to be with this question because I've been dealing with the diagnosis of shingles. So, then it comes down to the sensations of stabbing pain. And so I know that when I know now after 3 weeks of going through a lot of fear that first I bring in the past and then create the future and then take in ideas that people say, well, that's over in 2 weeks, and then it's not over in 2 weeks, the same recreation of the conditions for fear. So that I then feel like I have no choice because I've created the desire to get away from something or to create something different, which is still the desire to get away. So,
good catch, Donna. Good catch.
So I noticed now at the 3 week mark.
By the way, I just want to stay there for a second.
Okay.
What you said is significant, that your motivation was, even though you were looking for an alternative, the true motivation was the desire to get away.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Now, recall that the ego only knows what it does not want.
Yeah.
And that it's sure of. And it will be motivated and clever and forceful even to deal with what it does not want. So very good catch. Very, very good catch. Open your heart. You must open your heart. You must invite in light because the ego's trying to drown you in darkness of chronic pain.
Yeah.
You must call on your Holy Spirit. Mm. Look at the exact same situation. Not some other day when there would be no pain because you're still talking about pain. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Come present with the light. Good, good.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Jason, are you, can you talk with us or are you working?
Let's see.
I got you unmuted.
Let's see. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm working.
Okay.
So I'm listening.
Okay, very good. And then whose phone number ends in 2386?
That's what it was on a minute ago.
I saw Cecily and she dropped off.
No.
Is that Carol? All right.
Hello?
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 Who's
it's
that?
It's Julie.
Hey, Julie!
Hi.
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 Can you...
Hi.
Can you talk to us...
I don't...
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Can you talk to us about what does it take, Julie? What does it take... What's happening, just give me one idea of something that's present when you have the freedom to choose.
Awareness.
Of?
Well, there's a pause. There's a realization that I can choose.
Ah, yes. Yes. That's an empowerment. An awareness of your power, of your freedom. Yeah, critical. That's what we're talking about.
You have to maintain, you have to, it's not always present if you don't enter that moment of awareness, that brief pause.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Because the momentum of the ego and the world will, that's the default. That is the default for most of us. Just about all of us. And if you haven't had a good night's sleep or you haven't had your coffee or whatever, it's definitely your default. You're going to make the wrong choice first because it's based on your past, based on some judgment that you're so accustomed to making, and you will not be free to choose because you've already decided before you had a chance to think about it. So, yes, you have to be vigilant, like Ross was telling us. And you have to know, like several people and Julie has supported us here, you have to know that you actually have the choice. You can't forget that. And then, and only then, can you know that you're responsible for your own salvation. You might need help to see it, like Kenny says. He says, sometimes life gets difficult and it sneaks up really fast and you really need to go to some place you trust. That's just fine, but it's the action that you're taking that says, I don't have to go into the darkness. I don't have to go down. I can even use this tough situation to go up, back to heaven, Tim would say. Yes, absolutely. Good, good, good. Michaeline, welcome. Michaeline, I know you weren't here for the meditation, but since you're a writer, you're probably pretty clever with words.
Okay, Andrew, lay it on me.
Tell us what has to be present so you have the sense of freedom to choose.
What has to be present is
and the way we did it in the meditation was we first went, well, this is easier. What's present when you don't have a choice?
Well, I think there's always a choice. I mean, certainly situations come up, but still you have the choice to choose how you look at the experience or how you're going to approach it. What has to be present is, I think when I came in, awareness, I mean, but also just silence. I mean, in order to have a choice, I have to recognize I have a choice. You know, if I don't recognize that I have a choice in any situation, I'm going to be a victim to the situation, whether it be positive or negative.
Well, you know, that silence is part of the tool that you step back from the situation, right? Because the world is coming at you with the facts and choices, and your body's probably responding with hormones and feelings.
Right. It's reaction, being reactive instead of of going silent and just, you know, giving the space to be able to actually know there's a choice and make a choice.
Yes, that's what Sundari was talking about, was presence. You got to get out of the worry, and you got to get out of the judgments and the fears, and get present for even just a moment so that you can get back to a free state of mind. Then you can hear the Holy Spirit. Then you can look at your alternatives, and you're free to choose. Good, 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 good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, let's go dig into some of these, like I say, we're going to see some stuff that's pretty pointed tonight. I'm glad there's no beginners tonight where I'm going to take you, not on this page, but I'm going to take you to some other pages that are just a bit ugly. Yeah, but let's start with this. Page 445, paragraph 1 in section 1, The Forgotten Song. And Jacqueline, when you get there, would you read for us paragraph 1?
The Forgotten Song. Never forget the world, the sightless sea, must be imagined. What it really looks like is unknown to them. They must infer what could be seen from evidence forever indirect and reconstruct their inferences as they stumble and fall because of what they did not recognize, or walk unharmed through open doorways that they thought were closed. And so it is with you. You do not see. Your cues for inference are wrong, and so you stumble and fall down upon the stones you did not recognize, but fail to be aware. You can go through the doors you thought were closed, but which stand open before unseen eyes waiting to welcome you.
Okay. This is literally a blind person. He's asking you to imagine what it's like to be blind. Has everybody, when I was in grade school, we put on blindfolds for, I think it was 3 or 4 hours. It's like half of the day, and it was a long time. The teacher, they joined 2 classes so we could stay blindfolded for a couple of hours. Make our way around. Have you guys ever done that? Well, you can imagine maybe when you walk around in the dark, you know, when the power goes out, really dark, like no night lights, and your toe just hits that thing. Oh, you can't find the doorknob. You eventually do, and then you map in your head where the doorknob must be. And still there when you turn around to get it again. That kind of thing. It's very good. It's a very good analogy for when you cannot see what's actually there. And from Jesus' perspective, that's exactly where we are. We are blind to the nature of what's really going on here. We're blind to our own minds. We're blind to our own abilities to be the love that we seek and share it. It's what we've chosen to do for a while. But he knows that some of us are ready to come out of that. Out of hell. Yeah. But as it was said, thank you, Ross read a little section from Ken Wapnick. And I told you about earlier in the book where it says the ego knows with certainty, the only thing it knows with certainty at all is what it does not want. Therefore, most of your world is colored by what the ego is careful to judge appropriately and avoid when necessary. Most of your world. Okay. Let's go take a look at what Jesus says about your world just a little further. That's why I say, if God, there's no newbies here. We're coming back to this page in a little while, so I'll bring you back. So for now, turn to page 653 in the text. 653 in the text. I'm just going to read 3 paragraphs, but they're doozies. This is the final chapter, by the way. This is chapter 31 that we're looking at now. And, you know, he's buttering you up for those first lessons, which are pretty radical. But look what he says. Now we're up to, Ross, would you read for us the paragraph 1 in The Real Alternative?
The Real Alternative. There is a tendency to think the world can offer consolation and escape from problems that its purpose is to keep. Why should this be? Because it is a place where choice among illusions seems to be the only choice, and you are in control of outcomes of your choosing. Thus you think, within the narrow band from birth to death, a little more time is given you to use for you alone, a time when everyone conflicts with you, but you can choose which road will lead you out of conflict and away from difficulties that concern you not. Yet they are your concern. How then can you escape from them by leaving them behind? What must go with you, you will take with you, whatever road you choose to walk along. Wow.
This is a paragraph where Jesus is pointing out the nature of the illusion, the nature of a nightmare that you're dreaming remains with you wherever you go because you're dreaming it. Look at how he gives you ownership of what you're doing. First of all, he calls out that the world in sentence 3 is a place where choice, but it's among illusions, seems to be the only choice, and that you still think you're in control of your outcome. And they're all illusions. Yeah, that kind of explains the world that I've seen, where it just keeps building up to fall apart. It's amazing, the world just builds up so strong in some areas, and then the same ones that were so strong fall apart. And then new ones pop up that seem to be the new way. Yeah, amazing. Sentence 6 is kind of... Emily, go ahead.
The what you will take with you, is that the unconditional awareness that we're talking about earlier? Or?
Well, unfortunately, what you're going to take with you is your belief.
Yeah.
What you're going to take with you is your illusions that you really believe you have.
Oh, I see what that's... Okay.
You know that saying, wherever you go, there you are?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see, if you're worried, if you actually have existential fear for your survival in a body where everything goes right every day, at least it'll go right someday, so then you could choose to be truly free and happy. If that's going on in your head, you're just carrying the nightmare with you.
Perpetuating it.
You're perpetuating it. You're just waiting for it to happen again. And you're trying to avoid it, like Donna was saying. Donna, very wisely, she recognized that each of her choices were to get away from what she didn't want. That is absolutely the ego in charge. So that's what that sentence is. Wherever you go, you're taking it with you, because these are what you have chosen to afford, what you've chosen to believe are the limits, the illusions. Body, time, space. You think that this is horrible, right? But you really believe you are a body, you're not free, and you're not as God created you. You're as your mom and dad created you, or whatever life circumstances have molded you into. You say, I am what I am because of what happened to me. You say, the ego says. That's what it's talking about, Emily. Is that it's the default to carry those beliefs with us, Michaeline? Those are shadow figures. They just hang out. They keep coming back because we believe them.
And they sometimes are unconscious but they come out so that I can see that they're there.
They're unconscious because they're believed.
Yeah.
Just like idols. Idols only have the power we give to them.
Right.
But they don't have any less than that. Do you see how important this responsibility for your own thinking is? And how freeing it is to heal your thinking. Because then you'd be empowered not to drag around these illusions. Not to be staring at the shadow figures.
This morning I woke up with a dream that my grandson, when he was a young man, boy, 9 years old, was crying as he told his mother that he was going to be moving to Colorado with his father. I woke up really afraid and sad. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, I can continue to worry about this all day long, or I can call him and say, does this mean anything to you? And he said, absolutely no. And I said, okay. But it's kind of like we have to examine our belief systems that are not working for us, that are making us feel bad in some form or other. And we have to say, well, do I want to keep them or do I want to heal them somehow?
Yes. It's very important to recognize how you got upset. Not necessarily what got you upset, because the world will continue to give you nightmares, it'll give you bigger tax bills, it'll give you flat tires, medical problems. That's going to happen constantly. So it's not important what makes you unhappy. It's important that you recognize how you became unhappy for being okay just a minute ago.
For instance, as a psychologist, I was taught to believe that if you have a dream, it has meaning.
Yep, sure.
So I thought, well, I'm going to test this with this one. And it turned out it didn't have any meaning at all, except it made me feel bad for a little while.
Yeah, watch out for that. Watch out for that one.
Andrew, isn't the how the ego, though? Isn't the ego the one that asks the how?
Ego asks why.
Oh.
Why did this happen to me?
Spirit
would say, no. How did you get upset? Well, I got upset because I thought about it, and I started to see how much loss it could bring me.
Oh, yeah.
Then I got upset, and that's universal. But now it doesn't matter what, does it? It's because your mind went into loss patterns and judgments and worry, and you gave a bunch of meaning to the situation, and you forecast how it would hurt, or it was unfair. That's why it's not important. The details are not important. The how did you lose your peace? That's what we focus on. That is universal, and it goes with you wherever you go. When you heal your mind, you take it with you. If you leave your mind sick, you take that with you. No matter where you go. That's what that Emily was pointing out in that sentence, in that paragraph.
Kind of what I was trying to say about my dream is I had this belief system that I need to get rid of.
Yeah! Who wants it? Who wants to feel that way?
And yeah. The other thing, too, is changing. It's like thinking that it's going to go away if I change the characters.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. Yep. What a trick is that?
That's a huge one for me, because I always think, well, I don't need to deal with this person, so I don't have to deal with this problem, and I don't have to deal with this issue, so I'll just surround myself with these other people, and then it comes back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even if the other people are perfectly pleasant and nothing happens with the new people for the rest of your life, Michaeline, you'll still wake up thinking about the problem you got away from.
That's true.
You're not free.
No.
Yeah, that's why you can use forgiveness for the past events. It's the same since there's no time. If you're worried about something, that's present. Even though the person's gone, situation is gone, if it's making you unhappy at all, bring in the Holy Spirit, do some forgiveness on that event.
Yeah.
Free yourself.
Right.
Good. Okay. Now, let's see, who read that paragraph? Ross did. Okay, Luann, would you read for us paragraph 2.
Freedom of choice is no illusion, but the world has none to offer. All its roads but lead to disappointment and nothingness and death. There's no choice in its alternatives. Seek not escape from problems here. The world was made that problems could not be escaped. Be not deceived by all the different names its roads are given. They have but one end, and each is but the means to gain that end. For it is here, and all its roads will lead, however differently they seem to start, however differently they seem to go. Their end is certain, for there is no choice among them. All of them will lead to death. On some you travel gaily for a while before the bleakness enters, and on some the thorns are felt at once. The choice is not will the ending be, but when it comes.
So, it's not a very cheery paragraph. Anybody else here ready for the Kool-Aid? Should we just drink it?
give it up?
Give it all up. Right now, forget about it.
Right.
That's why I was glad there's no newbies here, because we were going to read this paragraph out loud. I want you to recognize that this is Jesus talking to you. Jesus, whose mind has been healed and turned over to the Holy Spirit entirely. You see? So he has already traveled all the roads possible in the for the world that Kirill could offer him to bring any kind of joy. You still have some yet to go. You who have children, you who have a motorcycle to fix and ride yet again, you know, you who have these hopes and prayers of something fun to do that will bring you joy here in this world, have not risen to the level of awareness of Jesus. And there's no hurry. Finish up raising those kids, have some more. Do creative things in the level of material world and enjoy it. There's no hurry as far as finishing the world. There is no need, however, to delay your joy while you do it. And that's what we are trying to apply to our lives. Wherever you are spiritually, whatever level you're willing to afford in your awakening, there's always the opportunity to be choosing more joy and less fear. Even if you don't have all the joy, and you still have some fear, less fear is better, more joy is better. Ross.
So lately, I've just been, every time I watch the news or hear a commercial where they talk about being safe, I just laugh because, you know, I know what this paragraph is saying. There's no one gets out of this world alive. So what, safe, I'm going to be safe if I wear a mask. I'm going to be safe if I do this, if I do that. You know, and commercials play on that. The marketing guys are just, they love it. Oh, yeah, we can play on their need for safety.
Yeah.
I just laugh. It's just immediate laughter every time I hear the word safe.
Yeah, there was some, I forget who said it, where I heard it, but it made an impact on me, and that was, you're born naked and you will die naked. You were born naked with nothing and you will die naked with nothing. Oh, what about all the in-between? What about all the in-between? And I kind of kept that sober thought in my head. This paragraph talks about, you know, everything dies. What real value is it from Jesus' perspective, where death is an illusion, where death is a fantasy? Do you recognize that? Here in this world, death is a fantasy. Interesting word, isn't it? Because you kind of think of fantasies as maybe positive things, but they're made up things. So you've made up the idea of death, and this author knows it. And he says, this is a world that you're living in, where everything dies, including you. And from his perspective of eternity, he's like, what are you doing? What are you giving up the ability to actually create? and then share what you've created forever. You got a better idea? He knows. And that's what he's trying to help us to see. If when you're ready, paragraph like this will hit you right. But if you're a newbie, if you just open Course in Miracles for the first time and read that, I don't think you're going to be charmed into reading anything else in this book. But that's his perspective from his healed mind. He's just calling it. He's calling it like it is. So if you got the stomach for it, let's read one more paragraph of this oh-so-not-charming comment on the world. Emily, would you read for us lovely paragraph 3?
There is no choice where every end is sure. Perhaps you would prefer to try them all.
Try them all.
Before you really learn, they are but one. The roads world seem to be quite large in number, but the time must come when everyone begins to see how they are to one another.
How like they are to one another.
Men have died on seeing this because they saw no way except the pathways offered by the world.
He's talking about suicide there. We'll come back to that. Go ahead.
And learning they led nowhere, lost their hope. And yet this was the time they could have learned their greatest lesson. All must reach the point and go beyond it. It is true indeed, there is no choice at all within the world. But this is not the lesson in itself. The lesson has a purpose, and in this you come to understand what it is for.
Yes. Yes, Sundari.
Oh, all through this section, I've been thinking of a spiritual singles group I went to at Spirit Rock. And we were asked, go break into a group of six and tell each other your worst and your best story, you know, of your life. For all six of us, it was identical. The thing that was the worst was the thing that was the best. The thing that was the best for me was that experience with my daughter in the hospital. Mm. Because it was the first moment I knew I couldn't do it. As competent as I am,
yeah.
I knew I had to get to that point to understand that all my skills, that everything I'd ever learned wasn't enough. Had no bearing on the situation. And that was the moment I surrendered to Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
In truth. But it was unreal to me that six people ran, and our group was the only one that I know of like that, but somehow we migrated to each other. All six people had these terrible situations that were also the best situation in their life.
It's part of the awakening that Jesus calls out. Turn to page, hold your finger here, we're coming right back. But thank you, Sundari, I'm going to support you and show you something. Hold your finger here and turn to page.
She did make it, by the way.
What?
She did make it, by the way.
Good, I'm glad.
To me, without my realignment of reality or of belief system, you know, it was only my believing something other than what was actually happening.
Yes.
Allowed her to see it and believe it.
There you go.
And sort of walk together through the miracle.
There you go. There you go. You had a hand in that. Okay, turn to page... just a moment. God, okay, looks like I'm not supposed to go there. Okay, so let's just continue. Oh, first of all, let's look at this paragraph a little further. Okay, so he's calling out in paragraph 3 on 653. There's no choice where every end is sure. It seems to the ego that certainty is a good thing. But the problem is that he's just said in the previous paragraph, every end in the world is loss. He's just calling it out. That's what we've been busy doing, is using our mind to make a situation that every sentence has a period, and that period is death or loss of some sort. He's just calling it out because it's time to look at the world. Okay? And then he's kind of humorous. Perhaps you'd like to try them all. Try everything. He's like, no problem, I'll wait. Go ahead, I'll wait. But then, interesting sentence on sentence 4, bottom of the page. He says, look, some people, after you've tried everything, you finally come to a realization on how, and the older people here know this better than the younger people, all of the different options have more in common than they're different. People, their motivations, opportunities in your life, having a lot of money, having little money, that has more in common with it than you ever imagined after you've experienced it. So he says some people commit suicide at this point. They're like, oh, what's the use? It all leads to me being challenged and unhappy again. Just going to kill myself. He says, yeah, that happens. Some people give up because they see no way except the pathways that are offered by the world. We're reading A Course in Miracles, so that, as many people said in our after our meditation, we're reading A Course in Miracles to become present and aware of choices. Now, in these bodies, in the illusion, as what you think you are, to become aware of your freedom even now, that's the bonus of a spiritual path. Finding yourself, even now, in this hell of a circumstance, that you can choose peace. And
just a funny thought. Do you think we have so many past lives so we can choose every single road?
Well, yeah, you might try. You might try. But then I have realized that I don't have to live those lives. There's one mind. I have access to all of them. All of them. I don't need to go do more. Okay. Okay. But in your arrested desperation, you know, I told you that I have some family members that are in the AA program, and so I get to go to some of the meetings, and I get to see some of the literature, and one of the pithy phrases that the AA people have, these are people who have saved their lives by stopping drinking. That's it. It's stopping drinking is the purpose of their program. Alcohol has made their life difficult, and they just got to stop doing that and then get back to life. That's really what the program is about. So they have some clever things that will come along the way, and they call it a spiritual program, and I truly believe it is. But when you get right down to it, they say it's about stop drinking. So they say, one person was speaking, they said, I'm blessed by desperation. My life has become, with this alcohol, their life has become so difficult, so bad, that they know they can't drink because they lose their job, they lose their loved ones, the kids won't talk to them, they lose their money, they can't, need another way. They need another way. Just like we with A Course in Miracles, our ego just isn't working for us. We'd rather be happy, and we know we can. So we're blessed by desperation if you continue to read A Course in Miracles this big, thick, fat book with no pictures, not much humor, but it's getting you what you truly want. You're blessed by desperation. So this person on page, on this page here, 654, that committed suicide, Jesus is saying, you know, he was just in that open state of mind where you'd be willing to just die. Why? Because you saw that the world is the same. Well, what is miracle principle number one? Does anybody remember miracle principle number one? Say it.
And that there is no order of difficulty in miracles?
That there's no order of difficulty in miracles. One is not harder or easier than another. That's because they all deal with something that's the same. You see? It's the same level. A dream is a dream. And anything in the dream is still a dream. So the miracle is dealing with dreams. They're all the same. So there's no order of difficulty in undoing what's not true. See, from Jesus' perspective, this is really, really simple. He knows it's more complex for you because you're still inside the dream. That's why this paragraph is there, to help you realize that that's actually that vulnerable moment of surrender where you, you feel like committing suicide because you know, there's no other choice than just the world, and all the options the world had turned out to be all dead ends. He says, wait a minute, don't give up just yet. This is a pretty nice place to be if you're willing to be open-minded. Okay.
Andrew?
Yes?
In that desperation, is that blessing the desirelessness?
Yes, actually, desirelessness for the world. A desirelessness for the world. You see, as long as you desire something in the world to make you happy, it is a block to the awareness of truth. So it's tricky, huh? A little tricky. And the Course says, if we left you right there with no hope, then you would commit suicide elsewhere. It says, if you didn't have something else to replace the world, you would just give up naturally. It says that. If you've ever had a holy instant of release where you got still and you felt a little light in your heart for no reason at all, just because you felt permission to be happy, then you know there is a beyond the world. And I think everybody here has at least had one moment like that when you were happy for no reason, just because you got present, you had a good meditation. It's happened to me many times with A Course in Miracles and my meditations, where I'll actually get really still and really simple in my mind and really clear, and I'll realize that, and for that moment, I'm completely free. And there's just a love that fills my presence for no reason at all, other than I'm not thinking about the world at all. And I thought, man, that's a door to go through. I'm going. And I've been going ever since in my meditations. Okay, how much time? Oh, okay, we need to get back to work. Okay, we only have a few minutes left, so let's go back to page 445. Oh, this is perfect because it talks about going through the doors. Okay, so looking at page 445, paragraph 1, let me just comb through it real quick. We only have 5 minutes. We'll make sure we don't miss, so we get set up for next week for paragraph 2. So let's see, never forget the world, the sightless see. Yes, we're talking about a blind person who cannot see, and so they have to picture everything. It's sort of a substitute or a dream of what's there, right? So it has, that world has to be imagined for what it really looks like is unknown to them. You have closed your spiritual eye. You've closed your creative eye. You have closed your extension ability. And everything that, as an ego and as in a body, you do is a projection of a projection out there. So you recognize this is a huge difference between projection, which means it starts here and it ends up over there, and it could bounce back and hit me, versus extension, which means it's connected to me constantly. This is a bigger discussion we'll have one night, or we'll do in a weekend intensive, how cause and effect are not separated and cannot be. It's one of the metaphysical principles of your spiritual awakening and, of course, in miracles. Okay. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. All right. So they kind of stumble around. And when they do, look at sentence in the big sentence, sentence two, where he says, you have to infer from what could be seen from evidence forever indirect, in other words, in their imagination, and reconstruct their inferences as they stumble and fall because of what they did not recognize, comma, or he's about to talk to you about some of your successes in the world. Or walk unharmed through open doorways they thought were closed. It worked out okay. You didn't even expect to get that money or that time or that day off or that sweet release or that cure came along. I've had several people in my life who cancer just stopped and disappeared. Like, God, I thought I was going to die. They didn't expect to go through the door. Well, that's what this is about. The world will just keep you going, folks. All right. And then he calls it, you do not see. You do not see with your body's eyes and with your past. You got to be present. Remember we talked about, several people said, awareness and presence. And that's key to your spiritual awakening, because your spiritual life is in the exact now, outside of time. That's the door you will go through in your final awakening. It will be a present moment of, oh, like that. All right. Okay, so that gets us through the first paragraph, I think, just fine. We're going to hit paragraph two next week. All right. Thank you, everybody, for studying Course in Miracles with me.